I'm Juliana Grassi, your host of the Rare Disease Report podcast. Rare disease may be more prevalent than you think. Approximately 25 to 30 million Americans, or 1 in 10 people, are living with one of the 7,000 rare diseases that span a multitude of medical specialties. Less than 10% of them have an FDA-approved treatment. Researching therapies can be difficult or virtually impossible due to the lack of funding or access to patients. Many of these challenges constitute a lack of awareness on the part of the medical community, patients, government agencies, and the general public. So let's start talking. In honor of Newborn Screening Awareness Month, we'll be discussing the new diagnostic and precision medicine guidance tool called Beginnings, which is the result of a partnership between Inozyme Pharma and Rady's Children's Institute for Genomic Medicine. In this episode, we dive into the groundbreaking technology and the impact it can have for the future of rare disease screening with Catherine Nestor, Vice President of Physician and Patient Strategies from Inozyme, and Dr. Stephen Kingsmore, President and CEO of Rady's Children's Institute for Genomic Medicine.
Thank you both so much for being here with me today.
Sure. I'm Catherine Nestor. I'm the Vice President of Physician and Patient Strategy at Inozyme Pharma, and I've been in healthcare and biotech for about the last 30 years, and for the last 3 years working at Inozyme on ENPP1 deficiency.
Hi, I'm Stephen Kingsmore. I'm the President and CEO of Rady Children's Institute for Genomic Medicine, which is a nonprofit research institute affiliated with Rady Children's Hospital in San Diego. How did I get into what I do? Well, I started out life as a physician. I had a strong interest in genetics research. I started off my academic career identifying disease genes, and gradually, as genomics has blossomed, we now use genomics at our institute to solve the diagnostic odyssey. This is the problem that parents have, finding a diagnosis of a rare disease for their child.
Catherine, I was hoping you can start by talking about the new partnership and the motivation behind it between Inozyme Pharma and Rady's Children's Institute.
Yeah, so we were thrilled to be able to be part of the initial consortium for the project. And, you know, just as an overarching gratitude to the project, just to have some way to have, you know, all rare diseases have a better diagnostic option is critically important. But for us specifically, we're working on a disease with really high mortality. It's not easy to diagnose. And so to be able to have parents have this option through the newborn screening program was just critically important.
And is that a specific rare disease that you're focusing on?
Specifically ENPP1 deficiency.
Would you be able to share any background on that?
Yeah, so ENPP1 deficiency is an ultra-rare disease. We know that it's about one in about 80,000 live births. So it is quite rare. It's very heterogeneous, and so sometimes the presentation, you know, is really hard to connect to the diagnosis for physicians, and some babies, unfortunately, don't get diagnosed until they've already passed away. And with the clinical trials happening, it'll be critically important to be able to connect those infants to the study as soon as possible, given that high infant mortality.
And I know that newborn screening has become more prevalent and more common in practice as the technology has progressed. Dr. Kingsmore, if you wanted to start, if you could speak on some of the milestones that led to the development of the technology you guys are presenting.
Sure. So what we're talking about is something that's brand new. It's called Beginnings. And that stands for using genomic sequencing in newborns, all newborns, to identify several hundred, probably 400 or 500 different disorders that have early childhood onset and that have effective treatments today. So we're taking the concept of newborn screening, which has been around since the 1960s, and instead of doing mass spectrometry to pick up biochemical anomalies in blood, we're using the same sample, a dried blood spot, but instead decoding the baby's genome. And that allows us potentially to look at over 7,000 genetic diseases. However, what we're doing is mainly testing healthy babies, and so we are limiting our analysis just to the diseases that meet the very traditional criteria for inclusion on newborn screening. And to put this in perspective, newborn screening, that the actual menu, the test menu, varies from state to state. And in some states, it's as few as 30 conditions. In some states, it's as many as 80 conditions. We want to take that number up to all genetic diseases for which there are effective therapies today. And there has grown over the last 50 years an immense gap between what we screen for and what would be eligible for screening. We want to close that gap and make this available to 3.7 million babies a year in the United States and worldwide to 140 million babies every year.
The ideal would be every baby that's born, even if they're healthy, so that you can screen if there's something that might present later. Is that correct?
Yes, the tragedy today, what we're replacing is this awful thing called a diagnostic odyssey. Some patients, some people who are affected by genetic diseases don't realize they ever have a genetic disease. I heard yesterday about one of our employees' brother who was an adult before he was diagnosed as having Klinefelter syndrome. This is kind of the par for the course, tragically, that we have effective therapies for hundreds of diseases and doctors fail to diagnose them. They think they have some common disease and they get treated symptomatically for that, when in fact there's a genetic disease causing their symptoms and a diagnosis is never made. And on average, across all the diseases that we're looking at, it takes an average of about 7 years to make a diagnosis. Can you imagine being a parent with a sick child and waiting 7 years to know what's wrong with your child and getting a treatment that's not symptomatic, instead is aimed at the molecular cause of your child's illness?
Yeah, I have to say, I'm always amazed hearing from different experts and doctors in the fields, and even patients in some cases, about how many different rare diseases do actually have treatments and do have therapies, or at least like a good standard of care for them. There's kind of a gap between diagnostic practices and the treatment. So what makes the precision medicine of beginnings different from what's already being used for genetic testing in newborns, and how can it improve treatment going forward?
So at birth, babies have a heel prick, and a few drops of blood is captured on a dried blood spot. It's a piece of filter paper, and that's tested by mass spectrometry for biochemical anomalies. And that's fabulous. We're not replacing that. What we're going to do is to approach mums and dads during pregnancy through obstetric clinics and ask for permission to screen more broadly than the 35 or so conditions that are genetic that are on the current newborn screen. Initially, it'll be 450 conditions, but over the next several years, it will probably grow to be closer to 1,000 conditions. As I say, these are conditions that have effective therapies, and there's evidence that early treatment improves outcomes, right? So it's quite strict. Okay, the process then is that when the baby's born, the heel prick sample gets split in two, and part of that comes for a genome sequence. We decode the 3.2 billion letter DNA code of the baby about 40 times, and we survey for changes in the genome which would be associated with one of the target conditions, 400 and something. If they're positive, they screen positive. There's then a diagnostic interpretation, and then a report goes back. Now, if this is a healthy baby, in all likelihood, they went home, and so we will contact their primary care pediatrician or physician with the news. For certain conditions, we'll directly admit them to hospital because we know they'll imminently get ill and they must immediately get on life-saving therapy. So those are the two options. In either case, we then bring the child back into specialist care so that we can start the treatment. So this is a healthcare delivery system. It's very similar to traditional newborn screening, but it's on steroids. It's 12 times as many conditions, so 12 times as many lives saved, organs saved, heartbreak avoided.
And can either of you speak to some of the rare diseases that you'll be screening, especially the ones that, like you said, will need to be addressed immediately?
But some of these are really common, like hemophilia. Hemophilia is really common. Would you believe it? We don't screen for hemophilia. And so how do patients present? They bleed. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a baby recently who bled into her brain. Wow. So she arrived in the emergency department with a stroke, a brand new baby with a stroke. She was about 5 weeks old.
Wow.
So that's a great example of a disease. And you ask yourself, how in the world? I mean, we know how to treat hemophilia. We've had an effective therapy for it. And there are many types of hemophilia, but we've had effective therapies for them for decades. What are you excited about, Catherine?
I'm so excited about all of it. But, you know, I think I told Dr. Kingsmore and his team, when I told the patient community that we were going to be part of this consortium, both the co-presidents of GACI Global, who are moms with children with this disease, it touched them so much that they both immediately had tears in their eyes. And, you know, it was just such a win for them, because that community goes through just unimaginable situations. So with ENPP1 deficiency and ABCC6 deficiency, which is GACI type 1, GACI type 2, those babies present really sick. They have terrible cardiovascular complications. Many of them are in the ICU almost immediately, requiring incredible and intense, critical care. Some of them for the entirety of their life. Some babies never get out of that ICU and pass away, in some cases, without ever getting the diagnosis. So for families to be able to shorten that question, you know, that period of not knowing is important. For some diseases like ENPP1 deficiency, and there are, of course, many others, it's not only that you want to connect them to the right treatment, you also want to make sure you're not giving them something that's actually going to do harm because you don't know what the diagnosis is. And that is the case with ENPP1 deficiency. You would never want to give this patient burosumab, for instance, because that could possibly make them calcify more. So it's not only about getting the right treatment, but it's also about not doing harm by giving the wrong treatment. So I just think, you know, this is just game changing for most rare disease communities.
Absolutely. And I think even like you were saying, it's not even just about connecting them to the treatment and not doing harm, but I think with rare disease especially, there's a big emphasis on advocacy and awareness and kind of the community that you find when you do finally get that diagnosis. So,
And I think it helps families make future decisions, right? If you know you've got a child with a genetic disease, that may change what you decide to do in the future with planning your family. Mm-hmm. So I just think the benefits are just, you know, immeasurable here.
And I know we touched on this a little bit already, but if you could explain some of the gaps or unmet needs in the area, and what do you guys think are the next steps to implement this technology to move it forward?
Sure. So the gap is obvious. The gap is 7 years on average of delay in starting treatment. And those are just the individuals who actually get a diagnosis. Yes. So for many of these diseases, that just doesn't happen. We have examined middle-aged folk in Great Britain, where I grew up, and we diagnosed a bunch of them as middle-aged folks with hemophilia, right? So they're in the hemophilia, they're in this thing called the UK Biobank, which is 450,000 British folk. And when we go to their medical record information, which is available, there's no mention of hemophilia. And yet we ran this test on their genome sequences, and they have it. Right, so that's the gap. It's immense, and it's ridiculous in this day and age that it should even exist. It's called the diagnostic odyssey. And then after that, there's also a therapeutic odyssey, because most physicians don't know for rare and ultra-rare diseases the precise managements, and they're changing somewhat rapidly. The drug industry is doing a marvelous job of creating new orphan drugs. But these are for conditions that are so rare that an average physician will never have seen a case of that before. Mm-hmm. And so they're in all likelihood going to treat them symptomatically for something common that mimics the disease, as opposed to nailing a zebra. That's what we call it as physicians. We call these as zebras. And we're taught not to go after zebras. Don't chase zebras. Treat the common causes first. So that's the gap. Now, how we're going about it is super exciting. We formed a public-private pre-competitive consortium, and everybody is invited to join. Advocacy organizations, parents, stakeholders, payers, insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, diagnostics companies, other technology companies like IT technologies. We have about 30 organizations already who've come together to make this occur. Part of it is technology development. And remember that newborn screening today costs about $80 per baby tested for the actual test. So we need something that we can shrink down the cost so that truly it's something that will fit within healthcare budgets. So there's a whole technology consortium. And then really the critical thing is a large clinical study. We have to prove out that this works. We have to prove the clinical utility and the cost effectiveness. And that's what we're about to start. We'll start it early next year.
Excellent. That's very exciting.
I would just add to that, this consortium and you know, Stephen and his team pulling this together and moving this forward, it is an amazing example of how when everybody is working towards the same thing and everybody is really backing it in the same way, we all want the same thing. We all want babies and families to get the right diagnosis. So it's just an amazing example of when you bring all of the stakeholders to the table, what can be accomplished. And, you know, it's just a model for other things that and how things should be done going forward in other ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything that either of you wanted to add that we didn't already touch on before we wrap up?
There's one thing I need to point out, and that is right now our genome information is almost exclusively white folks, right? Northern European white folks. And we got to fix that. Yeah. And so tragically today, if you're not Northern European ancestry, we don't have enough genome information to really provide an adequate solution. So one of the key aims of the research, the trial we're going to undertake, is to make sure we compensate for that, to make sure that we enroll enough African-Americans, enough Hispanic Latinos, enough from the Asian community, enough Polynesians, and so on. We need to fill out those gaps so that we have equitable access. The treatments are effective in those folk, but they have a disadvantage currently that we need to catch up the genome literature for them.
Definitely.
If you're interested, reach out to us. This is an open invitation. Mm-hmm. We need as many people as possible to get involved. Yeah. There are some significant hurdles, as you can imagine, to changing one of the foundations of newborn medicine. We need a lot of supporters.
I just can't say enough about this work and how much it's just going to change the future of medicine for newborns.
Thank you, Dr. Stephen Kingsmore and Catherine Nestor, so much for your efforts and insights on such an important initiative for rare disease medicine. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss our monthly episodes. And thanks again for listening. I'm Juliana Grassi, your host of the Rare Disease Report.